From 1668, a writer named Ned Ward produced, in serial form, his most famous work, The London Spy, where he travelled London and documented the lives of various Londoners by visiting taverns, fairs, street stalls, and indeed the lives of prostitutes. In the mid-1960s, a book was published looking at swinging London from the same perspective. In today's episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast, we travel back to London at the height of the miniskirts and the Beatles and look at prostitution during these times. Welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. It's that old cliche where every generation really does believe it has invented sex. The reality isn't to be disbelieved or scorned. All it really means is they've discovered sex for themselves and the facets that go with each generation. After all, the young adults of today have sex at their fingertips, quite literally, with apps like Tinder, Bumble and Badoo all showing available and willing partners within as little as 1 kilometre away. And who says they didn't invent sex with the euphemism Netflix and chill? But let's return to another time when people thought they'd invented sex. London, by the 1960s, was perhaps the most fashionable, coolest, and sexiest place to live. Sex, drugs, and music were everywhere, and the skirts were the shortest they would ever be. In 1966, a book imaginatively called The New London Spy was published, and it was divided into chapters that would give an insight into the lives of Londoners. One of those chapters covered prostitution in the capital, and I will read you the whole chapter verbatim. Words that may offend, I will read as written, as a historical reference to time and place. But before we start, a few notes. This was a time before decimalisation in the United Kingdom, which happened in 1971. We're dealing with shillings, 20 shillings to a pound. And a pound would be the equivalent of about £23 today, but certainly everything was much cheaper then. And for my overseas listeners, it would mean £23 is the equivalent of $28 today. The average male earned somewhere between £15 and £20 a week in London by the time of this book. So, if he visited a prostitute who costs £4, it might well mean a quarter of their earnings gone as fast as he came, so to speak. London's prostitute. Prostitutes exist because the demand is there, and so is the supply. Never call a London prostitute, not even a whore or a harlot, nor even by that meaningless phrase, a good time girl. It may seem surprising, but the personal pride of such girls can be easily upset. London's professional ladies are a very touchy group of females. Most of them have feelings and tempers as well. Ask a girl if she's a pro, and even the most obvious of them is likely to reply with a good old-fashioned verbal slap around the face. Unlike the girls of Paris or Hamburg, they don't, as a general rule, glorify their chosen profession. Just how many there are in London, no one really knows. The The total fluctuates from day to day, almost from hour to hour, but a conservative estimate has put it as never less than 10,000. This works out at one for every 500 men in Greater London at any one time. Take away children, the impotent, homosexuals, those are scared of VD, and the downright faithful, and the ratio becomes frighteningly small, or attractively small, whichever way you want to look at it. The total cash which changes hands is really an unknown quantity, but a figure once attributed to a Home Office official a few years ago was probably not very far out. He put it then at around £10 million a year. Add a million or so to cover the increased cost of living, and you have a fairly good figure for Britain as a whole, with at least two-thirds of it going into the hands of the girls in London. Only a minor part of that vast sum goes, however, on plain, ungarnished sexual intercourse. For any girl, the real money these days is in the extras, and there are very few of them that are not anxious for every additional fiver which extras can coax out of a client's pocket. The result is that there are girls in London to satisfy every known taste and fad and sex, and it wouldn't be difficult either to find some who would be even prepared for the right money to try and find something still new to the oldest profession in the world. Whatever is asked for, somewhere in London, there's a girl who will quote a price. To a man whom sex has so far meant common or garden intercourse, the variations which London could provide may seem repulsive, even horrifying. They can also be downright dangerous. But it's very easy to get the girls. Lavish payments for the beating of middle-aged and elderly men with ropes, whips, riding crops, and even walking sticks, according to their whims, is often preferable to hustling along the Bayswater Road for clients at £3 a time. Following closely in popularity to beatings are the perversions in which various forms of rubberware are used. In these activities, the client takes off all his clothes, then dresses completely in tight-fitting rubber trousers and jerkin. The feel of the rubber against the bare skin soon produces the desired sexual climax. Usually, the dressing up in rubberware is accompanied by an exhibition by the girl. For the client who doesn't like rubber next to his skin, London provides opportunities galore for dressing up in prostitutes' clothing, including every stitch of the girl's underwear, and for prancing about flat and high heels. The service usually ends up with a session of so-called French love. For the more normal of the men with tastes and perversions, there are hundreds of girls who specialise in bondage and correction. This means being firmly bound with a rope, followed by a good thrashing with a cane, swished by the girl concerned, with as heavy a hand as she can manage. This can go on until her client is sexually exhausted, or the man pleads for intercourse, and then this is graciously allowed. Men who want the beatings to be the other way around find it a great deal harder to pick up a girl ready to be whacked. A few years ago, there were many girls who, for an additional few pounds, were prepared to take a beating with a whip or a cane. Times change, and the girls have found that now they don't have to work so dangerously, but there's still a few around who will. Although these girls don't like to admit it, they are mainly the old hands. Their looks have gone after years in the business. Their chances of making anything but a poor living at ordinary prostitution gone as well. There is one girl, she is actually 48, notorious in Notting Hill and Paddington who will take up to 50 strokes from a client. The cost is, however, a little disturbing. Her rate is £1 a stroke, and one of her sales talks claimed that she is the cheapest in town in that line of business. She is one of the real old-timers in London prostitution, although by no means the oldest. There is one girl still at it in Soho who remembers business and the First World War. She's one of the few who describes herself as a whore. The younger girls, especially those in their teens, are not likely to be as honest as that. Few of them will face the fact that they're prostitutes and cling to some remote outline of respectability. Some of the girls will go to great lengths to put a facade over their professional life. One of my favourite descriptions of themselves is business girl. Many more cling to the model description. A few venture as far as call girl. But be they business girls, or models, or call girls, they are not hard to find. In 1959, a new Act of Parliament became law. It was aimed at clearing prostitutes from the streets of the West End and several other points in London. It had been said that the sights of girls touting for clients offended decent men as well as decent women, especially those from abroad. It obviously didn't offend many, but most stayed to watch the girls haggle over prices with the actual would-be clients. There were often more watchers than clients and girls put together. However, the Street Offences Act came into being, and the police got busy, and very soon the girls had almost vanished off the streets. The supporters of the new act put their heads in the sand and said, "What a wonderfully cleaned up and moral city London has become." Facts are a little different. Any moral welfare officer knows that there are now more girls in the game than there's ever been before the Street Offences Act became law. It's just that the girls now steer clear of the law. They do this in five different ways. The clubs, the coded advertisement boards, the madams, the few girls who risk prosecution in Holloway and still walk the street, and the country lane beats. The number one method, the clubs, attracts most of all the men from out of town. Chatting up a girl by a club bar doesn't seem to be so sordid, even if the drink she keeps ordering is coloured water, yet costs more than honest whiskey. By no means, all club hostesses take men back to their own flats after the club or drink and dive where they are supposedly working has closed, but there are not many who will still say no if the offered payment is high enough. Any doubts about whether a girl does or does not can usually be settled in a nightclub with a £1 slip to a waiter, or in a lesser establishment with a drink for the barman. Their knowledge and advice is always correct. That is because usually they get a cutback from the girls, 10%. But the girls in some expensive nightclubs are not for the kinky brigade. For them, it has to be straightforward sex only. Girls who can ask and certainly get £20 for one act of intercourse will very seldom agree to take part in any perversions. The genuine hostess doing part-time on the game usually doesn't cheat. She offers nothing that she will not provide and tells the client she doesn't get off from the club until 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. and that he'll have to be around till then. Naturally, she expects him to pay for the taxi to her flat, usually in the Ladbroke Grove area or Earl's Court. She's likely to offer coffee or a drink when she and her client reach her fairly well furnished, probably on the Never Never. And let me just take a quick pause at this point to explain. Never Never as buying something from the catalogue and paying it up on instalments. Intercourse comes between clean sheets on a well-sprung bed, and provided the client is gone by about 7 a.m, he can stay as long as he likes. In the London prostitution market that is real value for money, the place to find the right sort of clubs, Mayfair, and as far east as Charing Cross Road, and south as far as Pall Mall, taxi drivers are the best bet for the clubs with the best girls. But the preliminaries of the clubs are usually more expensive than most would-be clients can stand. They frighten off many men long before they get around to discussing the girl's £20 or more present. This can be only a small part of the total cost. To get as far as discussing terms will cost a small fortune. Most girls in nightclubs, even in the smallest, demand a hostess fee of £5 before they will condescend to talk to a man. With fees like that, they can pull the wool over the eyes of the club owner about their real business if he happens to be one of the few who honestly believes that all his girls are good girls. The drinking habits of these hostesses can also be rather shattering. Champagne by the gallon, quite literally, is common. Of course, they don't actually drink it, but as fast as one bottle is opened and a couple of glasses poured from it, a hovering waiter whisks it away empty and obligingly returns with another, no doubt an empty from another table, topped up from another empty from yet a third table, a bill for a twosome encounter full of only promise can easily reach £40. On top of that, the 20 or so required for the privilege of actually having the girl concerned in her own bed can be a disastrous blow for the sexual urges of many men. Very often, the girl goes home to a cold bed alone, and the man returns to a lonely hotel room to lick his financial wounds. The clients in the know, looking for real value, choose the small drinking clubs. It is in these that the girls new to the game, not too hard, happy to receive £5 and give, in return, a personal service because they like it, can often be found. To find one, don't ask a policeman, hop in a cab. Most taximen will know the very spot. It's likely to be in Notting Hill, Paddington, Bayswater, Earl's Court, Hampstead, or Streatham, in that order. Girls in this type of club have another attraction. They get out earlier. The club almost certainly closes a couple hours earlier than the nightclubs do. 2 hours less drinking to be paid for, and 2 hours less waiting for what is to come. This sort of girl is also more likely to be the type who doesn't mind sneaking into a hotel bedroom. The chances are, she knows of a helpful hotel proprietor anyway. The number two method is a study of the notice boards outside the sort of shops where not too many awkward questions are asked about the real meanings of the words used on postcard advertisements. There is an elaborate unofficial code used in these. The whole business of this code is supposedly to deceive the shopkeeper into thinking that the postcard he accepts for his advertisement boards have nothing to do with sex. Presumably, some are deceived, but not many. They just like the certainty of income which postcards at 5 shillings a week can provide. A score or more postcards at that price can add a fair sum to the week's shop's taking. The police aren't deceived. Not that they seem to worry. This is because 4 years ago, they prosecuted a shopkeeper in Bayswater for living partly on immoral earnings. Their case was that the money used to pay for the postcards must have come from previous sexual earnings of the girls, and the shopkeeper must have realised that. The police got a conviction at the Old Bailey but the shopkeeper appealed and won. Since then, the boards have flourished, although still with the ridiculous respectability of the code. What makes it more ridiculous is the fact that at least half of the sex advertised on the boards is kinky sex. The boards have become the recognised medium for the girls who want to advertise anything other than ordinary intercourse. A few boards can be found in Soho, in some in Earl's Court, but most of them are in Paddington and the Bayswater districts, with Westbourne Park Road, Westbourne Grove, and Queensway competing with each other for top ranking. Ask for it, no matter what it is, and it's at odds on, there's a postcard advertising it. Rubber and rainwear made to measure. Phone Miss Rod at Riverside. Miss Rod clearly goes in for all sorts of kinky stuff, with the tight-fitting rubber clothing and high-heeled boots. Lovely fireside rugs made to order, Fulham. Here is a girl who specialises in intercourse on the floor, with all forms of perversions thrown in for good measure. Riding boots, always for sale, Park. Riding crops are used for beatings. Young lady gives Swedish lessons, Shepherd's Bush. Sexual massages for men who don't want intercourse for fear of catching VD. Accommodation for bachelors, Fremantle. Straightforward intercourse with no extras and out of the girl's gaff, all within 5 minutes. Dusky dolls for sale, Park. Coloured girls working together and both available for any man who thinks he can take on two at a time. Ex-governess seeks part-time work, Park. Sticks and whips available, also ropes. Young kitten for sale, Park. Normal intercourse. Madam has a few vacancies for a few pupils, Knightsbridge. Another provided with anything kinky. Whatever is wanted, it comes under the general heading of sex, then the chances are it is advertised somewhere on a board, and certainly in Bayswater. The charges, £5 for intercourse, possibly a pound or two cheaper if the client haggles, with the girl stripped off completely, with most of her clothes still on, £3 at the most. Costs for the most sophisticated services offered on the boards starts at a tenner. The number three method of finding girls is through the madams. There are three big-time madams in London, and several with lesser collections of girls available. Most madams do very well indeed, and take their holidays in the Bahamas or South America. They can afford to. They strive to keep their business on a high plane. They form the background of the genuine call girl system. It is as expensive and extensive in London as in any other capital city, and the madams claim that providing a high-class service of prostitutes for visiting businessmen from abroad, they are playing an important part in Britain's export drive. They are always equally concerned about the British businessman visiting London. He provides the bulk of their business, and they become known through their names and telephone numbers being passed around at the big London exhibitions, such as the Motor Show. The three leading madams claim that once a man has used their services, he goes back to them year after year. One of them boasts, "Exhibitions are held in London only so that my best and wealthiest clients can come up to town to meet my girls." They guard their girls as though they were debutantes. Some of these are respectable housewives living in the suburbs who pop up to town one or two afternoons a week unbeknown to their husband, to earn a few extra pounds for clothes. One well-known lady on the lists until recently of all three of the leading madams was the wife of a serving Royal Air Force officer. Others amongst these girls, who are the stars of London's professional girls, are genuine models who don't mind an afternoon in bed. There are still others, usually nymphomaniacs, whose wealthy mamas would have heart attacks if they knew what their daughters did on a spare afternoon. They are available, however, only to the very best clients, and for the more ordinary man who gets an introduction to the circles of the leading madams, there's usually something rather less refined. She will still get a better quality than the girl picked up in a drinking club, and often better than any girl out of a top-ranking nightclub. Introductions are, however, hard to get. Apart from hearing the madam's phone number from a friend at the exhibition, the only real chance most men has through an obliging hotel porter. If he is one of the comparative few trusted by the madams, the tip he will expect will be at least a fiver. Even then, there's no guarantee. If the madam doesn't like the sound of the would-be client on the phone, the introduction gets no further. Their security standards would be a credit to MI5. The number four method is picking up the girls who are walking the street and risking the 1959 Act of Parliament and arrest by zealous young police constables. They fall into two very definite groups. The old hands with faces lined by years of hard work and language to make any old-style sergeant major sound like a clergyman, and the very new who have gone on the streets to earn enough to keep themselves from starving. Frequently, they're not very intelligent girls who have found that dull factory work in London doesn't pay enough to cover the rent and also provide for eating. The game is sad, but an easy answer. Soon, this second type gets scooped up by a ponce. After midnight, the Bayswater Road has many and even more ponces on the lookout for new girls as it has would-be clients. These are the girls for whom prostitution can be a tough life. It can also be a rather rough one for their clients. Very few of these girls have flats which they can take a man, and the usual offering is a very short time in the back of a client's car, parked in the darkness in a nearby mews. The commons and the adjoining roads at Clapham and Wandsworth, and the Shepherd's Market in Mayfair, not to be confused with Shepherd's Bush, have a few girls. But the best beats, and therefore the best girls in method number four, are on the Bayswater Road itself, in Chepstow Road and Talbot Road in Notting Hill. A short note for mainly foreign listeners who believe Notting Hill to be one of London's best areas, and it is, but back in the 60s, it certainly wasn't. The girls are always very anxious to get back on the beat within a few minutes. That means for the usual £3 fee, the time allowed is enough only for intercourse at its quickest. That also means that the spot in the news, which the girls claims is safe from peeping toms, may be in full view of a couple of passing policemen just itching to make a couple of kissing car arrests. The number of such cases in a year which come before the London courts is not high, about 100. In most cases, the man pleads guilty to get it over with as quickly in the hope that there'll be no newspaper publicity, and there seldom is. The girl, of course, pleads guilty. To her, it's just like paying income tax. Distasteful, but essential. Method number five for finding sex for cash is the country lane beat. It's become more and more popular. Some of the girls, it seems, like to get away from the smells of the city and breathe in country air. For the man with time on his hands, it seems also to have its share of attractions. It offers all that number four method does, and it's all done with much less chance of an inquisitive policeman breaking it all up just at the wrong moment. The country beat first came into its own about 6 years ago. Girls started appearing among the bushes along the main A40 road to Oxford near Denham in Buckinghamshire. Their customers were mainly lorry drivers. The girls are sometimes to be seen here, but now their clients are men who arrive in Jaguars and Mercedes. Two other country spots are more popular with the girls and far less conspicuous. To get to both, a car is a must. There are no buses in the lanes, which the girls have made their own in Essex and Surrey. The best of these spots for business is a series of quiet lanes winding down the cornfields between Lambourne End and Ognar in Essex, yet only around 20 miles from the West End. The second is the top of the Box Hill and the Surrey National Trust beauty site. Both have a very pleasant countryside and fair selection of girls, providing the client doesn't mind the worst of all the old timers or the bottom of the barrel scrapings from amongst the scrubbers of the Cable Street area of East London. The consolation is the price, £2 a time, either in the corn or in the car. There is one big drawback for the clients in the country lane beat. It closes down very early. It's strictly an afternoon market, and around 6 p.m, the girls all vanish. The old-timers and the scrubbers all rush off for their nighttime beats. Most of them operate where the casual seeker after sex for cash can risk running into trouble, the London Docklands and Soho. Sex in Docklands is strictly for the seamen, the girls who use Cable Street as their main market at night might seem almost pleasant during their afternoons in the Essex Lane. At night, their interest is only the cash in the pockets of the seamen. They act strictly under the orders of their ponsies, most of them Maltese, who don't want ordinary visiting mugs. The seamen offer a better prospects for rolling, the art of knocking a man unconscious while he's in the middle of intercourse, and then relieving him of all his money. Soho is for the real mugs. In some windows, red lights burn brightly. The girls are likely to be ancient, and their personal glow will certainly not match the light in the window which advertise their availability. They will all use the title, young model, but most will remember better days in Soho of 20 and even 30 years ago. The description of young model applies in Soho to the age of 60 at least. Easier to find there are the professional virgins. It would be extremely hard to miss them. These are the clip joint girls who hunt the pavements outside the near beer clubs, promising the delights of intercourse, and a lot more too, if only the mug will spend all his money on alleged fruit juice drinks in a dimly lit and usually dirty cellar. The distraction is the fact that many of these girls are in their teens. The newcomers running away from home who have been picked up at the main railway stations by eagle-eyed ponsies. Soon, most of them will be fully on the game, but while they work as professional virgins, that's the police name for them, only about one client in 100 is ever likely to enjoy their sexual abilities. But they are still the first reserves for the real ranks of the girls selling sex, and there's a never-ending supply. Most of London's prostitution comes from the provinces, or from Scotland or Ireland, and the Emerald Isle provides more than its fair share. Every third girl in the game in Bayswater and Notting Hill seems to be Irish, but the Scots are well represented. In almost every case of a Scottish or Irish girl becoming a prostitute, whether to work in the streets or to mix it with hostessing at some club, there is an illegitimate baby as the reason. This can be a good thing for the client. If the girl has a baby to keep, the chances are she's not keeping a ponce as well, and she will treat her client well. The money from future visits which his interest promises would more than likely ensure she does her best to please. If the girl does have a ponce, he will probably be out working as well. The Blue Films business is also booming, and that's his line. Some of the club girls from the night spots and the drinkers can fix up a film show for those who like to see others demonstrating how it should all be done. For real life demonstrations, lesbians together are a man and girl. The girls who advertise on the postcard boards are the most likely for introductions. Any girl whose advertisement indicates that she goes in for extras will usually be able to arrange an exhibition if given an hour or two's notice. Such exhibitions are, however, costly affairs, and the participants and the girls who do the arranging will usually want to know from past acquaintance whether the clients can afford their charges. A show will cost at least £20. But Blue Films can be available at a much lower charge, and it is with these that Soho regains some of its old glory. Stand on a street corner in Old Compton Street or Wardour Street for more than a few minutes, and the chances are a proposition will come along. Blue Films are the real thing for thugs in Soho, who, just a few years ago, would have been merely content to pounce on a girl. Their charge, £5 a time, and the client pays the cost of a taxi from the Soho spot where they're approached to the scruffy back room where the show takes place. The films will be mostly old, some pre-war, scratch and faded, an indication in themselves that the world of sex for sale doesn't really change, except for one respect, the merging as a pawns class of the one tough mannish butch type lesbian. Their influence in London's prostitution is growing. In many cases, the butchies are pawnsies who drive the girls the hardest, and many of the younger prostitutes who work the streets of Paddington and Notting Hill are under their control. The partnership arrangement made by a butch is always the same. The butch has a regular job. Petrol pump attendant is one of the favourites. She works all day, while the girl is on the game, sleeps off the ravages of the previous night's sexual work, and also the demands made on her body by the butch. In the evening, the butch becomes the prostitute's maid, and a well-built butch can be a rather menace for a client with his trousers down who doesn't behave. A great deal of rolling is done by butch lesbians, who are usually safe in the knowledge that even the client who would complain to the police about being robbed in a prostitute's bedroom by a man would never risk the publicity of a case with a butch lesbian involved. Rolling, with or without the physical attack, can be a very profitable way of thieving for some of these girls, and even those from the top-class nightclubs may have ponces waiting to pick the pockets of wealthy clients. The girl, of course, would always claim that no one else could possibly get into her flat, and that the client's claim of being robbed was really just a way of getting out of paying her the money he had promised. There are rules for avoiding a situation like that. Avoid, like the plague, the bedroom with two doors, or the door with a wardrobe large enough to conceal a ponce waiting to nip out and grab the wallet the moment the trousers are laid aside. Avoid the flat where you pass a man on the stairs. He may just be going out for a drink while the girl does her stuff. He may be going round to the fire escape which leads to the bedroom, and so again to the trousers and the wallet. Avoid also the girl who has in her handbag an official looking card. If you catch a glimpse of such a card, green, red, blue, any colour, forget her quick. It's probably her hospital card for venereal disease treatment. The chances of catching venereal disease from most prostitutes, except the real scrubbers, are probably a great deal less than the chances of catching it from an enthusiastic amateur. But even if there was no risk, and there is, whether sex with a London pro is really worth all the trouble is rather doubtful. As any girl on the game with a touch of honesty in her makeup will admit, 9 times out of 10, the man will end up feeling he's been cheated, hurried too much, and sometimes actually sexually unsatisfied. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode, and in the next episode, we'll go to another chapter and we'll look at homosexual London in 1966. Till then, bye-bye.